American idols. Success. The idol of success. This idol shows up in so many different places and in so many different ways. And worshiping this idol a lot of times leads us to worship all the other idols that we've talked about in this series. I mean, money. A lot of people measure success by someone's net worth. Look at the Forbes 400, a list of the richest Americans. Many people look at that list and they say, there are some successful people. You know, and if you measure success by net worth, then yeah, they are successful. But what about their families? Because that's another area where some people measure success. They say, you know, I'm going to measure my success based on how talented, how gifted, how popular my children are. I'm going to base my measure of success on how good-looking my wife is or the social standing of my husband. And these people normally put a lot of pressure on their families because that is the place where they measure their success. That's how they define success. Still others believe that success is defined by being able to retire early and spend every day out on the golf course. I'm surprised I didn't get an amen from that one. Amen. And buy season tickets to watch the Bengals kicker score points for them. And some people define success that way, and for this group of people, that's what they live for. That's what they strive for. That's what drives them in life, to be able to spend all of their resources on entertainment and pleasure. And then yet others would turn to our idol from last week, the idol of appearance. And they use that as a measuring tool for success. If I could just look as beautiful as that person, I would feel successful. If my name were a household name across America, I would feel successful. See how the idol of success opens the door of your heart and invites all his ugly friends in with him. You know, and as we've shared over the last few weeks, there's nothing wrong with these subjects. There's nothing wrong with money. There's nothing wrong with having money. There's nothing wrong with being on the Fortune 400 list. In fact, that could be a very healthy thing if you have the right view of money. And there's nothing wrong with wanting to be a successful parent or a successful spouse. Our families are important, and it's important for us to want to be a good parent or a good husband or wife. Entertainment and pleasure, there's nothing wrong with having some fun in life. There's nothing wrong with being entertained and having pleasure. There's nothing wrong with season tickets or going out and playing golf every day. That one I can get an amen on. That one's not the negative, that's the positive. And the same goes for appearance. Ladies, there's nothing wrong with your gold jewelry. There's nothing wrong with wearing something a little sparkly. There's nothing wrong with your pearl necklaces. There's nothing wrong with wanting to look beautiful. There's nothing wrong with that at all. You should make the best out of what God has given you. Men, there's nothing wrong at all with wanting to get a good name. The Bible speaks very highly of getting a good name. But the problem, that the danger comes with any of these subjects when they push their way up into priorities where they should not belong. When they take over, when they push other things that should be more important than these out of the way. And you find yourself sacrificing your relationship with God, your time with God, the time that you spend serving His kingdom, being part of His church. The time that you spend with your family. When you start sacrificing those, then we've got a problem. When we fall in love with money, when we love our families more than we love God, when we are dominated by our desire to be entertained, or we obsess about our appearance, it's then that these subjects become very harmful to us and to those around us, to our loved ones, to our friends. When we bow down before these idols and crown them as king of our lives. Now the same goes for success. Success is not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing to wake up today and say, I want to be better today than I was yesterday, and I want to be better tomorrow than I am today. There's nothing wrong with that, but be careful that this does not take you over. That this process of seeking success doesn't cause you to lose sight of things that are much more important than success. Be careful not to bow down before idols that you feel will give you success. There's a story in our Old Testament, a very famous story that talks about this very subject. If you'd like, go on and turn there. It's Daniel. If you open your Bibles kind of in the middle, you'll probably find Psalm or Isaiah, and just start turning forward towards your New Testament. And you'll find Daniel, a decent-sized book. He's just after Ezekiel. Now, this story is a famous story. And if you grew up in church, it's a story that you grew up believing in. A story that you're going to be used to hearing, and you've probably heard it a billion and one times. And if so, I don't want you to skip to the end and miss the nitty-gritty of the middle, the stuff that we really are going to be able to apply to our lives today. Now, for those of you who didn't grow up in church, maybe you've heard this story after a while, or maybe it's been recently, maybe today might be the first day that you hear this story. If so, this is one of those stories that's just amazing. And it's really a difficult story to believe. I believe every word in this book is accurate. I believe it's true. I believe it with all my heart. And even with that attitude, when I read this story, I have to scratch my head and say, wow, that's hard to believe. That's just an amazing story. This story is the famous story about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and their trip to the fiery furnace of death. Before we get to the fiery furnace of death, let's look at some background. That's kind of fun, isn't it? The kingdom of Israel was split into north and south. And I was thinking about that during Larry's communion meditation when he was speaking about Abraham Lincoln. I was thinking, yeah, north and south. Different north and south. This is Israel. Israel split into north and south. And the north retained the name Israel. The south was called Judah. Now, eventually both kingdoms fell. Israel, the northern kingdom, fell to the Assyrians. And then years later, Judah was taken over as the Babylonian Empire just made it sweep through the land. And so, after Babylon took over Judah, much like Alexander the Great did in later years, Nebuchadnezzar, who was the king of Babylon, he would send people to go through his new kingdoms, through his newly acquired kingdoms, and they would find the best and the brightest, and they would bring them to the capital. And they would train them and teach them and indoctrinate them in the Babylonian lifestyle so that then he could use them. And he would just be filled with all these smart people, the best artists, the best musicians. Actually, turn with me. If you guys have gotten to Daniel, go to chapter 1. And we'll look at this here. Verse 3. It says, the king ordered Ashpenaz, king of his court officials, to bring in some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that they were to enter the king's service. Among these were some from Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. There we go. The chief official gave them new names. To Daniel, the name Belshazzar. To Hananiah, Shadrach. To Mishael, Meshach. And to Azariah, Abednego. Now, this isn't a bad plan, is it? Pretty smart for Mr. Nebuchadnezzar. And it gives us some insight, too, into these four guys, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. We see that they came from the nice side of town. They were either nobility or they came from royal families. We see that they were young men without any physical defect. They are handsome and intelligent. These guys had success written all over them, didn't they? I'm just reading this description. I mean, when you think of a young man with these qualities, don't you think there's someone that's going to be successful? Yeah, I thought so. Okay, all joking aside, these guys, they were really gifted. And they were well suited for success, so much that a foreign ruler could even see it. Well, God opens the door for Daniel, and we see this happen in the chapter 2 of Daniel. And Daniel is raised up by the king, and he's promoted to be over the entire province of Babylon. And he was in charge of all the wise men. Now, Daniel used his position and his favor with the king to bring his friends along with him. So his friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, were all moved up to become administrators over the province of Babylon. All right, royal officials, high ups. Well, sometime later, King Nebuchadnezzar made an idol. He made an idol out of gold, and it stood 90 feet high and 9 feet wide. 90 feet. Yeah, the ceiling here to the apex is about 30 feet. So if you can imagine, 3 times that height, an idol. Nebuchadnezzar summoned all of his high officials together to a special board meeting. Okay, we've all been to board meetings, right? There's a reason they're called board meetings. So he brings them all to this board meeting. At this board meeting, Nebuchadnezzar has his herald tell them that when they hear the band play, that they are to bow down and worship this idol. And they had like a BC studio band of just top quality musicians. I mean, they had a horn player, a flute, they had a zither, a lyre, a harp, and pipes, and all kinds of music. Now, considering all these different instruments, my mind kind of starts trying to imagine what the music would sound like. And I kind of get this Scottish, Celtic, Eastern ska band type sound. Kind of a little river dance with a mix of like some brass and this seriously wicked like zither solo. Meedly, 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 meedly. Right? I mean, come on, who doesn't live for a nice zither solo? And the harp's plucking smoke on the water. Well, you get the picture, okay? The band's kind of getting their stuff together. And so they had to bow down to this idol when the band played. And if they didn't bow down to this idol, then they were sent to the fiery furnace of death. Right? So the band tuned up and they started playing a Billy Idol song. And get it? Billy Idol. That's funny. I don't care who you are. That's funny right now. So anyway, the band started playing a song, and that was the cue. When the band started playing, you were supposed to bow down before this idol. And everyone bowed down before this idol except for 3 guys. You guessed it. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Now, Daniel must have been off on a business trip. He's not mentioned in this story. People ask that, what? Where's Daniel? Why wasn't he not bowing down? He might have been out of the picture. He's not mentioned in this story. But we know for a fact that these 3 were there and that they were not going to bow down no matter what. Now, a lot of us are faced with this very same thing on a daily basis. I mean, sure, we don't have a fiery furnace waiting for us. If we choose certain things in our quest for success. But in a lot of our workplaces, we're asked to go against the very commands of God if we want to be successful. And a lot of us feel like this is the only way we can succeed. We feel like, well, this is the only way I'm going to make it. I got to play by the world's rules because that's where I work. I work in the rule, or I work in the world. And they set up the rules, and I got to play by those rules or else I won't succeed. Preacher, you don't understand my life. You don't understand what I'm up against. If I don't phony up a bid or lie about a production date or treat people with contempt or get in their face and let them have it, they won't take me seriously. I'll lose the bid. I'll lose the sale. If I don't do these things, I won't succeed. Not in my line of work. And you know what? I haven't had your job. I haven't worked where you work. And there's a good chance that I don't understand. There's a good chance that I wouldn't be able to relate to what you go through on a daily basis. But I tell you what, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they would be able to relate because they were put in the most harsh of circumstances. They could have bowed down to that idol. They could have faked it. Remember when you were a kid and you'd cross your fingers and hide them behind your back and that meant that you could tell a lie and it wasn't really a lie, but it really was. You just had your fingers crossed. You know, they could have crossed their fingers and they could have bowed down. They could have thrown a little wink up to Yahweh. Hey, I'm not meaning it, man. I'm just doing this to be successful. I'm just doing this to survive. This is the world I'm in right now. God's a forgiving guy. You know, they could have faked it and gone on with their life, and they would have been able to succeed in the grand empire of Babylon. They were asked to simply play by the house rules. The rules of Babylon, and everything would be just fine. But if they didn't play by the rules, then they had more than their job on the line. They had their lives on the line. You know, and when we get caught at this fork in the road, we quickly see who our God is. Do we worship the idol of success? Or do we worship God, the God of heaven and earth? Because worshiping the idol of success asks you to compromise your values. So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they chose not to compromise their values. And some of the other city officials saw that they had not bowed down to this golden idol. And they went to the king and they told him about these three Jews that paid no attention to the king's orders. All right, we're used to these type of people at work. Hungry people. Because see, here are some other successful young men. And they are climbing the same ladders that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are climbing up to this level of success in the Babylonian Empire. And they wanted success, and they were hungry for success, and they were willing to kick anybody, push anybody down, knock anyone else off their ladders in order to get success themselves. So they saw these guys not bowing down, and they were filled with this environment that creates this cutthroat attitude of greed and envy. Because see, worshiping the idol of success breeds competition with your peers. So in this cutthroat race up the ladder of success, these three successful young Jewish men were then brought before the king. And the king went over the rules again. Just in case you weren't listening, just in case you didn't pay attention to, I don't know, the last part, let me go over this again with you. When the music plays, you bow down and worship this idol. Or you get thrown in the fiery furnace of death. Yeah, I know. I should have had the echo. That would have made it better. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they heard him fine the first time. Crystal clear. They didn't need to have this repeated. They had made their choice. And they shared that with him. They said, hey, this was our choice. They didn't even blink an eye at this. Turn over to chapter 3. Verse 16. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to save us from it. And he will rescue us from your hand, O king. So they basically reply, my God is bigger than your God. My God is bigger than you. My God is bigger than your idol. My God is bigger than your furnace. Remember when you were a kid and you'd say, my daddy can beat your daddy up. Right? Well, this is kind of like the God version of that. My God can beat your God up. My God trumps your God. In a nutshell, they're saying, we have made our choice, and too bad, so sad, today's not your day. We're not going to bow down before this idol. In fact, tomorrow's not going to be your day either. We're never going to bow down to this idol. And this next verse here just really thumps me. One of the verses in the whole Bible that really sticks with my heart, because this is where I want to be. Listen to what they say. But even if he does not, what they're saying, even if God does not rescue us, even if God does not show up today, we want you to know, O King, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up. What a bold statement. And that's the kind of faith I want to have. I want to be able to say, God, I trust you even if you don't come through. I have faith in you, even if I'm let down because I'm expecting you to do something that you didn't do. I love you even if you don't show up and I burn in the furnace. That's awesome stuff. You don't understand my work environment. You don't know what I'm up against. These guys were about to be thrown into a furnace. This wasn't a written reprimand. This wasn't a demotion. This wasn't even losing their job. They weren't getting canned over this. They were getting thrown into a furnace. They were willing to lose their lives because they were saying, I bow to one God only. One God has my allegiance only. No matter what happens. Now Nebuchadnezzar, he gets furious over this. And if you look down in chapter 3, you'll see it says specifically he got furious. He got really upset, and he couldn't believe that at his level of success, he was king of Babylon. Babylon was an amazing empire. At his level of success, that someone would tell him no. That someone would defy him. And this is another thing that I see that the worship of this idol leads to. The worshiping of the idol of success cultivates arrogance and elitism. If you've climbed that ladder a few more rungs higher than someone else, then it's easy to look down on them. And not only are you looking down on them, you're looking down on them. And it's easy to fall into that trap when you worship this idol. And you think more highly of yourself. And so you get offended when you're not treated with the respect that your arrogance says that you should be treated with. So in his anger, he makes sure that these three guys were fully clothed in flammable material, head to toe. Read it. He ties them up, just in case somehow they'll be able to run out of the furnace. And he heats this furnace up 7 times hotter than it would be. Which I think is one of those overreaction things when you get mad and you get angry. Because if he was thinking, you'd turn it down if you wanted them to suffer. Right? He turns it up. They're going to die quicker. But he doesn't care. He's mad. He's upset. So he has these three thrown into the furnace. And this furnace was so hot that it killed the soldiers who did the throwing. All right? The soldiers who took them up there and threw them in, they died. They got burned up because the furnace was just that hot. As I mentioned earlier in this series, I said that I don't believe that we are faced with these moments in our lives where we have a choice and our choice includes God or death. We don't face that often. Not in America, not here. But I think these same type choices go on a daily basis. It's not between God or death, but it's between God and our integrity, between God or this idol of success. And I believe that many times we choose the idols in our lives. We choose not to choose God. And that's wrong. If you're a Christian, you've been bought by the blood of Christ. And your life belongs to God because you freely gave your life to God. You said, here it is. Here's my life. It's yours. I belong to you. How dare you turn your back on God and denounce your faith? of this being who has loved you so perfectly and has reached out and given you just forgiveness. And we turn our backs to simply climb another rung on the ladder of success. If God is number one in your life, then He is over everything. Number one means that He's number one when you're tempted to tell a white lie to make a sale. He's number one when you're tempted to steal another co-worker's lead. He's number one when you're tempted to sacrifice your values in pursuit of success. If God is number one, that means He is over everything. I look back at the story here, and let's read what happens when these three are thrown into the fiery furnace of death. I had to get it in one last time. Daniel chapter 3, verse 24. Then King Nebuchadnezzar leaped from his feet in amazement, and he asked his advisors, "Oh, weren't there three men that we tied up and threw into the fire?" They replied, "Certainly, O king." He said, "Look, I see four men walking around in the fire, unbound and unharmed, and the fourth looks like a son of the gods." Nebuchadnezzar then approached the opening of the blazing furnace and shouted, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out, come here." So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the fire. And the satraps, the prefects, the governors, these are the guys that all attended that board meeting earlier. All right, they all gather around them, and they saw that the fire had not harmed their bodies, nor was a hair of their heads singed. Their robes were not scorched, and there was no smell of fire on them. Then Nebuchadnezzar said, "Praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent His angel and rescued His servants. They trusted in Him and defied the king's command and were willing to give up their lives rather than serve or worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I decree that the people of any nation or language who say anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be cut into pieces." That's pretty harsh. "And their houses turned into piles of rubble, for no other god can save in this way." Then the king promoted. Talk about a story of success. The king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. You know, their faith was based in the fact that even if you don't come through for us, we're going to follow you. We're going to have faith in you. We're going to trust you. You're number one in our life. But look what God does. He comes through for them. I mean, in a mighty way, too. In a way that you can only look at it and say, "Oh, that was God." There's no other way they could have done it. King Nebuchadnezzar, who had been introduced to many gods, said, "This guy is the one real God. No other God can save like He did." As I stated earlier, this is one of those stories that you listen to and you say, "Wow, that's tough to take in. That's really hard to believe that really happened." But I believe it did. I believe every word of this is true. And believing that causes me to realize that they would have never been able to experience God the way they did if it wasn't for them putting Him number one. That event of Him saving them from the furnace would have never happened had they not put God first. You know, I think we shortchange ourselves. And then we shortchange ourselves out of experiences with God that can be this mountaintop. I think we do so because we're too chicken to stand. We're too wimpy to stand up and say, "God is number one no matter what. I'm not going to fold. I'm not going to fall. I'm not going to compromise. At home, in my place of work, in any place that I would pursue success." If we place God first place in our lives and we stick to that, then and only then will we see the success that comes by His deliverance. Not by our own hands, not by our own work. And wouldn't you rather have success handed to you by God than to earn it through things that you'd be ashamed to tell your wife and kids about? And things that you come to church and you think, man, I really shouldn't have done that this week, but I don't think I had any other choice. Wouldn't that just be a much better lifestyle? In the Gospels, Jesus is asked about the greatest commandment. What is the greatest commandment? And Jesus quotes an Old Testament passage. An Old Testament passage that I am sure that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego knew, that they reflected it in their lives, they showed that they had it written on their heart and they had it written on their hands, meaning that they had it written on what they did, the how they acted. And that verse is found in Deuteronomy chapter 6. It's referred to as the Shema. It starts in verse 4 and it reads, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart, and with all of your soul, and with all of your strength." Jesus said this is the greatest command. Another bonus is that He said if you follow this command, all the other commands will fall in line. If you put first things first, and God is first in your life, then all the other things are going to fall in line. I think this verse, being illustrated through Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and many others in the Bible, illustrates to us a very simple biblical view of success. And that is that it is to love the Lord your God with all of your heart and with all of your soul and with all of your strength. And you are to do this no matter what. That's what it means of putting God first in your life. He doesn't budge. He's not moved. He's not challenged. God's number one because you love Him with everything you have. Jesus said this is the greatest commandment. Jesus is right all the time. I happen to agree with Him. Love the Lord your God. Don't love idols. Don't love money, your appearance, your family more than God, success, pleasure, entertainment, any other idols that you might deal with in your life. Lay them down. Put them in their right place. And love God with everything you got.